1, 2, 3. Hello. You have discovered the Felon File. FelonFile.com is a podcast exploration and discussion of law enforcement, history, issues, and incidents in the Appalachian Mountains and elsewhere. Felon File is hosted by Scott Lunsford, retired police detective, sergeant, author and researcher. The Shade of Blue stories for Felon File today. Bonus episode. Background music. Hard Boiled, hosted by Purple Planet. The sponsor for today's episode of The Felon File is The Raven's Glass Pub, Asheville's best spurious restaurant and pub. This is a bonus episode of The Felon File podcast. Scott will be back soon with new stories of crimes and incidents in the Appalachian Mountains and elsewhere. In the meantime, I have prepared for you some short podcasts while Scott continues his research. In 1861, Mitchell Hayden had big plans for his family. They started out with the purchase of a 100-acre tract of land in Madison County, North Carolina, from two local men, Jesse Case and Jackson Stepp. The men agreed to sell Hayden the land for $150, payable over 3 years. To cover the $50 down payment, Hayden gave the men a horse valued at $85. The $35 in excess is to be paid in cash to Hayden to use as a starting stake to begin his new farm. This was not an easy transaction. This was 1861. The buyer was a free black man living in Madison County, North Carolina. There had already been one killing at the county seat directly related to the politics of the day. Before he received his $35, the two sellers were called up into the Confederate Army. Without paying the buyer the excess owed for the horse used as the down payment, $35 in 1861 was the equivalent to about $1,128.42 in buying power today, according to an online inflation calculator. Hayden also discovered that Case and Stepp never actually owned or hid rights to the property in the first place. Unfortunately, Hayden had failed to get the transaction in writing, making it impossible with the ongoing war to get the disagreement into court. In April 1865, Lee surrendered the Confederate Army, and the war was over. In 1866, Hayden, his wife, and his eight children lived on Reverend Roddy Doggett's Spring Creek Mountain property around 36 miles west of Asheville, North Carolina. At the beginning of February, a group of seven men called on Hayden late at night. Not in a social manner. He was forcibly removed from the bed and dragged out of the house. The attackers were all white men wearing disguises with ash and soot blackened faces. Even with the disguises, Hayden was able to recognize two of his attackers, Andrew and Swan Woody. Taking the black man into the woods, he was made to bend over a log and was whipped. At one point he was pistol whipped and boot stomped after the whipping. The seven men left Hayden still alive but badly beaten in the woods. One of the men recognized by Hayden, Swan Woody, spoke very loud and strong that no black family would be living in the Spring Creek community. His curses, threats and speech making were probably the reason he had been recognized by the beaten and whipped man. Making it back home, Hayden and his family moved off the preacher's property. Because of the severe beating, he was unable to work or share crop on any farm in the area. Madison landowner Jackson Reeves did allow Hayden and his family to move on to and live on his land, even though Hayden could not work it himself after his beating. With the assistance of his family, the Reeves family, and some of the neighbors, a new cabin was built on the Reeves property for the Hayden family. 2 weeks after the original beating, another group of the same men showed up once more. Night riders, or semi-organized clan groups, were becoming more emboldened. They destroyed the roof of the new cabin before the home was completed. Individuals involved with the attempts to run Hayden and his family out of the community probably felt they were entitled to do so, knowing that Hayden was a poor man and unfamiliar with his legal rights, feeling they had little to fear from legal punishment or ramifications. At first, efforts were made to locate and arrest Hayden's assailants. Individuals or families opposing these groups would often awaken to find a grave and crude coffin in their yard or pasture. Barns burned, crops destroyed, or other property damage. Hayden did have some recourse available to him at the time. This was the Asheville office of the Freedmen's Bureau. The Bureau of Refugees, Freedmen, and Abandoned Lands, also known as the Freedmen's Bureau, was established in the War Department by an Act of Congress on March 3, 1865. The Bureau had responsibility for the supervision and management of matters relating to the war, refugees, freedmen, and lands abandoned or seized during the Civil War. In May 1865, President Andrew Johnson appointed Major General Olive Roscoe Howard as Commissioner of the Freedmen's Bureau. Howard's headquarters was in Washington, D.C. Assistant commissioners and agents conducted the Bureau's daily operations in the former Confederate states, the border states, and the District of Columbia. A big part of the Bureau's job was the supervision of abandoned and confiscated property, to provide relief and help formerly enslaved people become self-sufficient. Asheville Freedmen Bureau agent Oscar Eastman took up the cause of Mitchell Hayden, cheated in the land deal, and then twice beaten in Madison County in the winter of 1866. Eastman took the affronts and attacks of the Night Riders, called clanning, personal, and did all in his power and authority to combat their activity. In late September 1867, Eastman resubmitted Hayden's petitions for relief to his superiors. The commanding general of the 2nd Military District responded with orders to investigate and arrest the African-American attackers. There had not been a serious effort to find the attackers and make arrests. The increased scrutiny and efforts to locate suspects by Eastman, with military backing from the Freedmen's Bureau, made many people nervous. Since the military authorities had taken up Hayden's case, and soon after the capture of one of the men involved, others also got worried. They sent representatives to the Freedmen Bureau agent Eastman with a proposal. They offered to pay Hayden $100, and enter a $5,000 bond to keep the peace in exchange for their freedom. Eastman informed the representatives that it wasn't for him to say yes or no to the offer. He suggested that all the guilty parties surrender themselves to him, acknowledge their guilt, and then enter upon their parole, to appear at any time when called upon. Seven men subsequently surrendered, and Eastman upheld his part of the bargain. He submitted the settlement offer to the military superiors for judgment. Eastman viewed the military and Bureau as tools that could be used to rebuild the South. The military serves as both arbiter and law enforcement. He used that power to punish criminals who he thought had previously escaped justice. In March 1868, Oscar Eastman became angry once more over a lack of justice and took up the case of another he felt had been done wrong. In a letter to Colonel George A. Williams, Eastman told of the case of Hannah McElroy, the freedwoman strangled and robbed by Klansman Harvey Roberts in 1866. Eastman wrote the general that McElroy had not received justice or received relief for the crimes committed on and to her. Buncombe County Court did little to protect McElroy or alleviate the community's concerns about protection from Harvey Roberts. Roberts had on three occasions hung the victim, almost strangling her in the process before letting her loose. A Buncombe County Court consisting of three men, who Eastman wrote were also Klansmen. A $5 fine was leveled upon Roberts for the assault. Less than the amount of money that had been robbed by Roberts from Hannah McElroy. The $5 fine soon became the standard fee for assaulting an African-American individual in Buncombe County Courts. Captain Oscar Eastman continued working for the United States government. Until 1909, when he was employed to operate the Old Soldiers' Home in Ohio. After an evening of drinking, 51-year-old Edward Leonard, of the 6th United States Cavalry, shot and killed Captain Eastman, seriously wounding Sergeant George E. Arnold and Private Warren Wright. Captain Eastman was in his office when shot in the back and killed. Now a more current shade of blue story. An Alabama Sheriff's Department issued an escape prisoner alert on April 29, 2022. Here is that unfortunate shade of blue story. A sheriff's office in Alabama issued an alert after an inmate and the assistant director of corrections went missing. The inmate, held on capital murder charges, should be considered armed and extremely dangerous. Lauderdale County Sheriff Rick Singleton states Vicky White, a 25-year veteran of the department, left the jail with Casey Cole White. She told staff she was taking him to a mental health evaluation. She then was going to seek medical attention because she wasn't feeling well. It should be noted that despite having the same last name, the two are not related. Her patrol car was found in a parking lot of a shopping center. Investigation showed Cole did not have an evaluation that day, because Vicky oversaw courthouse transportation. It's likely that no one felt comfortable challenging her on the transport. A sheriff's employee for 25 years, Sheriff Singleton stated. "We're just in disbelief, she's been an exemplary employee." He said White had been voted Employee of the Year multiple times and was well liked and respected. "We're looking at all angles," he said. "Did she assist him in escaping? That's obviously a possibility. Was she kidnapped en route? Taken against her will? That's obviously another angle we're looking at." Deputy Vicky White was armed with a 9mm handgun before she disappeared. Investigators assume that Casey is now armed. Described as extremely dangerous, residents are asked don't approach and call 911 instead. He was in jail for capital murder, and he has nothing to lose. You have been listening to the Felon File Podcast with your host Scott Lunsford. For more information on this podcast or Scott's books and writings, go to scottlunsfordauthor.com and felonfile.com. Scott can also be contacted at these websites. Be sure to check out the stuff page on the website. Pick up a Felon File t-shirt or coffee mug. You can also support the Felon File podcast by buying us a coffee from the link on the website. This is Victoria, your producer. Thank you for listening. 2. 1. End.